I'm John, he's Patrick. Together we're the functional nerds. I'm John, he's Patrick. Together we're the functional nerds. Together we're the functional nerds.
My name is Patrick Hester, and I've had too much turkey.
Hi, Patrick.
His name is John. John, are you tired too?
I actually feel good. I had a fairly relaxing. I didn't overdo it on Thanksgiving, so I'm feeling pretty decent. And we are recording this Thanksgiving weekend, although it won't air until a couple weeks after that. And I hope everyone out there had a good Thanksgiving. Today, our guest is Tracy Townsend, and she's got a brand new book out through Pyre called The Nine. It's actually her debut novel, I believe. Tracy, thank you for joining us today.
Thanks so much for having me.
Is this indeed your debut novel, or did I get that wrong?
No, you are absolutely right. It's my first toe in the water.
Nice. Well,
congratulations on that. We always love having debut authors on because then they get bigger and then we can't get them back on the show. But yep. We always like to say, like, remember when we had them on? Yeah, can't get them on the show.
And then we meet them in a convention and they're like, who are you? What?
Yeah. What? But congratulations on that. You know, before we get into anything else, because so often we get so sidetracked and we get into all sorts of different things.
No.
The last 2 minutes of the podcast are like, no. Oh, yeah, tell us about your book. So why don't you let people know what The Nine is about? What's the sort of premise and why they should go and buy it?
Sure. Well, so The Nine is the way I elevator pitch it. And I do give a sort of problematic elevator pitch, I've been told, but I guess that's the reason why I write instead of shill quite so much face to face. But I tend to think of it as thematically and feel wise, the aesthetic of it is sort of Philip Pullman's His Dark Materials meets Ocean's 11. So there is a heist. There's a caper that goes on through the course of the book, but it is set in a world where science and religion have actually fused into a sort of singular controlling entity, which has resulted in a sort of explosive progress of technology in this very chaotic and simultaneous way. So it's got a mashup of steampunk and clockpunk and electropunk and dieselpunk elements with a little bit of a gas lamp kind of aesthetic going on. And it really embraces a lot of stuff that I've always loved in genre literature. You know, they say you should write what you love or write the book that isn't out there in the world. And I grew up reading comic books and loving sort of superhero teams and odd people thrown together at weird angles, jutting up against each other. And so I was very much inspired by, for instance, The Watchmen, the idea of what happens to people who are part of these sort of odd mercenary outfits and so on after they get unplugged, once they get shelved. You know, what happens to them and where do they go? And how would a world so driven by science and technology and hyper-rationalism have a use for these sort of people? You know, what would they be called to do? And so it follows the story of a black market courier named Rowena Downshire, who ends up having an extremely important delivery that she's supposed to take to a man called the Alchemist. And along the way, she's robbed. And they need to figure out why it was she in particular was targeted and why the book was taken from her. And what they discover is that the book records the data of the grand experiment in capital G and E of life itself, as conducted by God the Creator. There are 9 people who he is watching and recording information on in order to determine when he's going to pull the plug on the world.
Wow.
And so now they're concerned that the book has fallen into very much the wrong hands and they got to get it back.
Wow.
Sweet. Well, that sounds awesome.
Yeah.
And Pyre was nice enough to send me a book. Patrick, did you get a copy?
Yeah, I got it too.
Nice. Well, thank you, Pyre, for sending us this book because it sounds great, and I got it right here, and I'm looking forward to just another one to throw on the pile. Another one to throw.
you can make a book for it out of them eventually, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah. It's great. You know, I'm so happy to have all these books, and I just wish I can read faster. And I actually read. I don't want to say I read fast, but I get through them pretty good. I read 100 books last year, and I still feel like I barely put a dent in that to be read pile. But it's a nice problem. It's a nice problem to be have.
Yeah,
it's a nice problem to have. Now, let me ask this: is there a dog in your book?
There is.
Okay.
There is a dog named Rabbit.
Okay.
The dog named Rabbit gets his name because of one of his lame back legs that gives him a sort of a funny hop. And he is, as anyone who knows me might realize, partly inspired by one of my dogs, whose name is Little John, and who is a basset mix with the funkiest damn legs you could possibly imagine. And yet he runs. It's like when Gimli says in the Lord of the Rings movie that dwarves are really wasted on long distances. They're really sprinters. It's like that.
Nice. Yes, that was Tracy's dog that we heard. And you know, look, if you listen to podcasts, you're going to hear dogs. That is just, you know, don't listen to podcasts if you don't want to hear dogs, because people got dogs, everybody. That's how it works. Where I live in my apartment complex, every single person has a dog except me. So I'm very acquainted with dogs out in the
court. Holidays are coming up, John.
Okay. Oh, we should get a dog? Right. Yeah. My wife and I are not dog people. I understand people are dog people, but I am not a dog person.
I am notorious for making my friends who have kids miserable by talking about how they should get a puppy for their kids.
Oh, yeah. And that's a ruiner bonus. Well done, sir. That's impressive.
My friend Quinn, when he had his first son, I'm like, you know, he needs a puppy. And he's like, no, he doesn't need a puppy. And then they had a second son, and I'm like, you know, boys should not grow up without a dog. They need a puppy. And he's like, no, they don't. And I just kept saying it over and over and over again. But I never say it to the kids, though, because that's just cruel. But I always say it to the parents, and then it was hilarious because like three Christmases ago, all of a sudden he's looking at me. He's like, "We got a dog. I hope you're happy."
Mission accomplished. Yeah, my son Corwin, he's 10. When we moved into the house we live in now, we were finally in a place that was big enough to have a dog, and this is about 7 years ago or so now. And we specifically chose this house because we felt like it was, you know, a good place to good neighborhood and all sorts of things, but also we could fence in the yard and do the dog. So Little John was the dog that we got for the boy. And we had cats as well at the time, and they had a lovely relationship with each other. Little John thought the cats were the best thing in the world. The cats wished that Little John would go away and die. And as nature intends. And so unfortunately the cats passed away long before, you know, Little John is still with us. And Johnny went into a deep depression, like deep, soulful, almost comical, except he's a basset mix and he suddenly wouldn't eat layer of depression. And we realized, like, oh God, he needs friends. And so we ended up in the very weird cycle that you can get into where we bought a dog for our dog. I should say we adopted a dog for our dog. They're both rescues. So now we have a coon hound, and we have him. And so it looks literally like Laurel and Hardy, because one of them's sort of short and fat and mouthy. And the other one is kind of tall and stilty and sort of wide-eyed and never says anything. And just looks alarmed all the time.
And that is the cycle, right?
Yeah.
You're now in it.
Yeah. My husband and I had to have a real serious talk the other day when we noticed Johnny having a problem that he ended up getting over. So it was not the thing we were afraid it might've been, but we were like, what do we do? Like when Johnny goes, like we do for Gwen, and like, just, and we decided that Gwen is a loner. Yeah.
it sounds to me like what I need to do this year or this coming year is tag John and his wife on a lot of pictures of kids frolicking with puppies.
Yeah, I mean, you know, possibly make yourself one of those what do they call them, snapfish sort of cards, or all sorts of just stock images of puppies and children. Have a happy holiday. You can really up your game.
Just constantly be tagging John on those.
That's fine, I'll just ignore it. Like I
a very comfortable relationship of strategically ignoring one another.
Oh, yes. That's how it works.
That's good.
Well, that sounds great. You know, I want to move into our next section because, but before we do that, I do want to thank the people that back our show over at patreon.com/functionalnerds. We couldn't do it without you. I mean, we could, but it wouldn't be as fun and we wouldn't feel as good about doing it as we do having your backing. So for all the people who already back us every month, thank you. We really appreciate it. It really we've been doing it for a while now, and it gave us such a big boost when we started it, and it continues to boost us. So thank you to all the people that back us. If you like the show and you listen every week, enjoy these interviews with folks like Tracy, consider becoming one of our backers. All you have to do is go over to patreon.com/functionalnerds, and you can pledge an amount. You can do $1 a month. That helps us greatly, and it really means the world to us. So if you would like to do that, please do. And now let's get on to our picks of the week.
Picks of the week.
Now, Tracy said that she had many categories, so I'm actually going to throw it to Patrick first, if Patrick has one ready.
And I do.
Why don't you go first, Patrick, because I want to give Tracy lots of time to talk about her picks. So why don't we go first with you, Patrick?
Mindhunter.
Ooh, on Netflix. Yes.
On Netflix, yes. I don't know if anybody has seen this yet, but it's the... it's the story of how the FBI's behavioral science division started profiling and figuring out what makes people kill people, and they started actually doing interviews with killers in prison.
Oh, this is a nonfiction piece then, or
it's okay. It's more like a bio series. It's okay. Definitely fictionalized. Oh, it's right. Definitely okay. Fiction, but it's based on the guy and the team that started the whole thing. And if you've ever watched things like Criminal Behavior or
Criminal
that
Minds,
the show?
Is it
Criminal Minds? Yeah. Thank you. Yeah, the original character, the original guy who's really weird and he pissed everybody off and left the show. Mandy Patinkin.
Yes.
Was sort of based on this guy.
Oh, that's cool.
And the character, I forget his name off the top of my head right now, but he's the FBI. He worked at the FBI, and he didn't like the way that the FBI was reacting and doing things. And he thought that we needed to understand more about the criminal brain and the mindset and the psychology of stuff. And he started secretly interviewing prisoners who had killed people in order to do like a proof of concept kind of thing. And then he started using that, and he got a partner, and they were kind of put in the basement like the X-Files. Mm-hmm. And then they brought in a psychologist person. She taught at a university, and they just kept building from there until like everybody got involved. Everybody thought this was a good idea and started funding it. And it's just that the first season is like they're trying to get this whole thing off the ground, and also kind of showing how by sitting down and talking to these people and getting into their brains, it starts to mess with him.
Oh, yeah. Oh, wow.
It really starts to mess with him. And they also, his partner is the guy who's credited, kind of anecdotally credited with coining the term serial killer.
Huh. So what's for this fictionalized for Mindhunters itself, where is it? Are they trying to set it in a time period that's analogous?
It is.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So
yes. So it's in the 70s.
Oh, all right.
Like late 60s, early 70s, I want to say. And Anna Torv is in it. If you remember Fringe.
Oh yeah.
She plays the university psychologist person. And it's just a really good show. I got into it because some people were talking about it online, and I thought I'd give it a shot, and just absolutely loved it. Great show.
That's cool. Yeah, I heard a lot of good things about it. I just put it in my queue last night. From what I understand, it's sort of like how the idea of studying serial killers began, that it was a different
yes.
type of criminal. Like they always thought of like, oh, there's a reason behind it, and they have a motive. And you know what they discovered is like there was a breed of people that it wasn't
right.
motive, it was their
yeah.
psychology. And yeah, it was sort of how that all started.
One of the things that they always cling to in the beginning is, well, if there's a murder, you always look at the X. Mm. Or you know, they always have, like you're saying, there's a motive.
Yeah,
right?
You're looking
there's
emotional ties and things. Yeah.
Correct. And what they were setting up is that sometimes there isn't any. Sometimes it's completely different. And that's what he was trying to set up. And there's also little vignettes in every episode that is leading to something. You can see that there's like a serial killer that's just getting started. And I think what they're going to do is they're going to lead into like a second season maybe where they start tracking this person.
You know, it's interesting because you're talking about this. My husband and I for a while watched Dexter. We didn't watch the whole series, but we saw the first like three seasons. And you're talking about there being a breed of person with a particular psychology versus a sort of person with a motive. It seems like in order to humanize Dexter, the writers there wanted to kind of cut it up the middle. So that there's considerable emphasis laid on the trauma that he endured when he was young and how that sort of shaped his consciousness versus him having a particular type of person that he's been trained by his dad to hunt and eliminate. So he's sort of given a motive that is sort of imposed on that serial killer psychology, which I wonder if how much of that was something that the people adapting that series from the novels and the original novelist, whose name actually I don't know.
Jeff Lindsay.
Yeah, okay. How much of that was a very conscious move resulting from exactly the kind of thing you're talking about?
I don't know, but it's interesting because I've met Jeff. Mm. I got to meet him at the Pikes Peak Writers Conference. And a nicer person you could not meet. He's very down to earth. He's this great guy. He is, sadly, in hiding.
Oh.
Because the Dexter books and the show brought out the crazies.
Oh, I bet they did.
And he's very, very private and very secretive. To the point where like I was involved with the conference and we were limited as to who could have his email address.
Oh wow.
You know, so there is that. You know, there's a lot of people who just focus on him and it's kind of strange. But he did talk about how they made a lot of changes to the series.
Mm-hmm.
He ended up not watching it because he didn't want that to impact his book.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
the books that he was writing. But he said that they did, he knows that they did some changes. He's not fully aware of them because he didn't want to watch it to kind of screw up his books. But I get the sense that they're not too far off from the character in the books, and that split, that divide that you're talking about is in the books.
Mm-hmm. That's really cool.
Yeah.
Also really sad for him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you write about serial killers and stuff like that, and then apparently you get on some people's radar, which is weird.
Yeah. Well, I guess they'd have to have a very particularly attuned radar.
So. Yes.
Now, Tracy, I know you have several categories of picks, so you can kind of start wherever you want. Maybe we'll talk about a couple of them, but maybe just mention the one that's at the top of your head.
Well, I have one specific thing that I wanted to squee about because it's very fresh for me because I just saw it a couple days ago, and I'm still kind of on cloud nine about it. And then kind of a category of things, which I think are appropriate to coming into holiday season and everything like that. So saw Thor Ragnarok in the theaters a couple days ago. And I will keep this brief because I suspect I may not be the only person who has squeed at you recently about it. But I think what I loved about Ragnarok is that it took such a sharp turn away from the other Thor movies, which I think never did a particularly agile or deft job of balancing out the fundamental ridiculousness of the premise of Thor and Asgard. I mean, we have kind of space alien, sort of magic, sort of science thing out in space, but trust us, they're not really gods, but they're kind of gods. And kind of taking that and balancing that against this gravitas that they wanted him to have in the sort of like huge Wagnerian sense, right? And I think the first two films felt very uneven on that emotional note.
Yeah.
And what I loved about Ragnarok is that I think at some point they sat back and they just kind of gave up. And I mean that in the best possible way, where they're like, we are bonkers. Nothing about this makes sense. And we are going to love that and nurture it and just be a little crazy. And whether it was just in sort of tension-breaking moments of side quips and things, or just the huge, lush visuals, or even the moments of ridiculousness that, like, Hela gets in her dialogue and so on, I loved that it was so self-aware and also so utterly unself-conscious. So that was great.
Do you know that I didn't even realize that that was Kate Blanchett?
Oh, wow. Yeah, I mean, she does really kind of sink into this persona that she's given. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was looking through some of my son's comics the other day, and he has a few of the more recent Thor comics where they've put Hela into it to kind of tag into the movie. And it's a very different aesthetic in a lot of ways. But I think the movie needed that, you know, for exactly the reasons I was talking about.
Two things. Mm-hmm. One, why are you handing me the melty thing? I don't even understand. Why are you handing me the melty thing? Yeah. We're having a conversation. I don't want to melt him.
I'm trying to give them a second chance here. Like, no, this is just and I don't know if the part was written for Jeff Goldblum or if they just said like, here, Jeff, do the thing. but did it really turn out? The big rock guy, that character, I can't even remember his name.
Yes, and that and the voice is the director.
Oh, it is. Oh my goodness.
Director of the movie.
Oh,
yeah.
That's so meta. That's I love that.
Yes.
Oh my gosh.
If you have not seen What We Do in the Shadows,
okay,
go watch it now.
See, that's the vampires in New York.
It's the vampires in New Zealand.
Oh, all right.
And one of them is the director of this film.
Oh, okay.
And see, they used to have a show. Oh gosh, I'm trying to remember what the name of the show was. They had a show on HBO. I can't remember. Anyway, they partnered with the New Zealand Tourism Board to make the movie What We Do in the Shadows.
Okay.
Which is this just crazy mockumentary thing about vampires in New Zealand. And it's hilarious. It's absolutely hilarious. And that gets you a sense of his sense of humor, which is totally in Thor Ragnarok.
Yeah.
It's throughout that movie.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I love that. I'm definitely, that's part of my New Year's Eve watch list now, because we have a tradition in the household where, in addition to eating ridiculous food all night on New Year's Eve, we watch ridiculous movies and sort of MST3K our way through them. So that sounds like the perfect thing. A couple of years ago, it was Dale and Tucker versus Evil, or Tucker and Dale versus Evil.
I love
a couple
that.
Of others, yeah.
I love that movie. Yeah. Yes.
So in terms of like a broad category of stuff that I think really works well for coming into Hanukkah or Christmas or whatever your holiday is, board games, man, board games. So I mentioned in the time that we were sort of setting up for the interview that today is Hobo Giving in the Townsend household. And Hobo Giving is when we gather for a Thanksgiving type meal, various friends, most of whom are bachelor men who don't have a lot of immediate family in the area to spend their holidays with, who also happen to be our gamer crew. And so we call them the hobos. And we invite them over and cook a big meal for them. And just like they do at our house almost every weekend, we end up playing a lot of games. And so we're kind of homebodies, but we're very social homebodies. We have probably about 300 different tabletop games of different types, from party game type things to sort of really big resource management, brain burners, and tactical warfare and so on. And I wanted to give some recommendations for people who are not sure what to buy for people, or who are dreading dreading to see their families around the holidays for fear of talking politics or hearing more about people complaining about their jobs or medical problems, that's like the trifecta of horrible for holiday gatherings, right? Like, I'm going to complain about my job, talk about my medical problems, or say the P word for politics. So anytime those three things come up, you're really in for it, and you need to either run for it or figure out a diversion. And several games that I think work beautifully and are great fun, both for people who are experienced gamers and for people whose last experience with a game was, the game of life or Monopoly. I would highly recommend Codenames. It's a really great social word association game that works in a spy mechanic, where you've got all these different cards laid out in a grid that are face down, and they have names on them, different words and nouns of different types, and you have a partner on the other side of the table who is supposed to be your handler in a spy mission, and they're giving you key phrases or clues that are supposed to identify for you which cards to turn over and identify as ones associated with your side. sort of like identifying safe agents for a drop. And if you misidentify based on the clues they've given you, either somebody who's an agent for the other side, then you end up getting them points, or you can even identify the assassin agent who will kill you and you lose the game. And it's very easy. It runs in about 15 minutes. It works great for people who are sort of intimidated by games. There's versions of it that are picture-based for people who have language differences. It's fantastic. Love the game Sheriff of Nottingham.
Oh, yeah.
Which is fantastic if you love your friends, but also like giving them a hard time and lying to them. So if you like razzing your friends and lying to them and profiting while doing it, you should play Sheriff of Nottingham so you can smuggle goods past people in these lovely little velvet envelopes, trying to get past different people playing the sheriff who are going to either smuggle or inspect your smuggled goods or not, thus earning you points and glory and bragging rights.
And don't forget, you can also bribe him.
Yes, bribery is key, definitely. And also along the social games, this is my 10-year-old's favorite, and it's also a huge favorite amongst my students, and I tend to use it a lot in creative writing courses, actually, Snake Oil. It's from the same makers who made Apples to Apples, who I think felt a little bit sundowned maybe by Cards Against Humanity coming out, you know, because it's basically Cards Against Humanity is drunk, evil, Apples to Apples. And so Snake Oil has a similar mechanic where you've got this hand of cards and they're all different nouns and you've got six in your hand. You're supposed to combine two of them to create a product. There's a different judge every round and they have an identity card they flip over to say, what kind of customer are they? They're a cheerleader. They're a caveman. They're a police officer. They're a superhero. They're a newlywed. They're whatever. And you're supposed to come up with, based on these six cards, you can kludge together a product which is specifically tailored to the needs of this type of consumer. And it involves lots of trash talking other people's play and fast talking, and it's ridiculously funny. And it plays fast and it can get huge. You can get up to about 8 people at the table. So it's really good for killing time while everybody's waiting for whoever's generously cooking the holiday meal to get done with what they're doing. So highly recommend if you are not the sort of person who's invested in $20 or $30 here or there for a couple of games to do that, if for no other reason than it can knock off some stuff from your holiday shopping list and also save you from some extraordinarily awkward holiday gatherings.
Dominion is also good.
Dominion's great. It's a little bit, I think it's a little intimidating for people who aren't used to either deck building mechanics or like a lot of synergies and things that you can build between the cards. But for people who have played other sorts of deck builders, there's an immediate jump in and they can just, and there's tons of cool expansions for that one as well.
And I recently played one called Seventh Continent.
Oh, I don't know that one.
It was, you could only get it through Kickstarter.
Oh, cool.
And they just did a second edition of it. And again, it was the only way you could get it was through Kickstarter. So I funded the second edition because I wanted the dang game after playing it one time.
Wow.
And it's essentially a tile game,
mm-hmm.
where you start laying out tiles and you draw new tiles and put them down. And then there's alternate versions of the tiles and you're just basically exploring this continent. It's pretty fun.
That is cool. Yeah. Actually, yeah. The signing that I'm doing at 1 o'clock today, for those, I live in Bolingbrook, Illinois. It's a suburb of Chicago. If you're in the Chicago area, you won't be able to come by today because you'll be hearing this in 2 weeks.
I used to live in Berwyn.
Oh, Berwyn. I had an ex-boyfriend who lived in Berwyn. It's a nice town.
I went to St. Odello.
The signing I'm doing is at a comics and game store. It's a small business Saturday thing called Villains and Heroes. So
nice.
Look them up if you're a Chicagoan. They've got all of these cool games we have described, except perhaps the Kickstarter one and likely many, many more.
My dad owned a restaurant on Cermak Road.
Oh, cool. Which one?
Sorrento's.
I actually know that one.
Really?
Yeah.
I very rarely run into anybody who remembers Sorrento's.
Oh, no. See, I'm a Chicago native, and during the summers, I would work for my dad at his company doing data entry and stuff. And so we would drive in from the burbs to downtown and either for lunch or dinner at various times end up eating all sorts of different places. And he prided himself on knowing places that more local people would know. And that, mm-hmm. I remember him taking me there when I was, I was probably like 15 or 16 at the time. It's been a while, wow. Been a minute. So, yeah.
It's been longer for me, but yeah, it was, I loved it. And, I've always talked about one of my fond memories is being in the basement of that place, putting mozzarella cheese through the shredder to get it shredded for the pizzas.
Depending on how you decide to do the lighting for that scene, that's either like fun family movie or the beginning of the slasher film.
It's fun family movie.
Yeah.
So, John, what's your pick?
Oh, well, I was going back and forth between two, and I'm going to go with a lighter one to kind of be a little more in line with what we're all picking. This is a Hulu original that just came out maybe a week or two ago, and it is Future Man. Have you heard of this one, Patrick?
Yes. I've seen commercials. So okay.
Yes. So it is from the producers on it are Seth Rogen and his partner, Evan Goldberg. That's his name. And it is starring Josh Hutcherson, who was in the Hunger Games movies. He was Peeta in the Hunger Games. He's the lead. And the basic premise, it's a comedy. I should state that right at the beginning because it's a sort of a science fiction comedy. And it is a raunchy comedy. It is a Seth Rogen movie. So, you know, if you enjoy the humor that was in Superbad, then you'll like this. If you don't like that kind of humor, this is probably not for you, even though it's a TV show. It's on Hulu, so they can get away with anything, and it's raunchy. So if that is not appealing to you, do not take this pick. Like, you will not like it then. It would be a little gross or offensive for some people, but it's great. It's a science fiction concept. It's basically Josh Hutcherson's character plays this video game. He's the only one that beats it, and then these two people from the game actually exist, and they time travel from the future back to the present, where he's the savior because he beat this game. And if that sounds familiar, they call it out right away. He's like, "That's the plot of Last Starfighter."
Yeah, I know. I saw that.
That's right from Last Starfighter. Yeah. So it is very meta. So there's all these science fiction references that are called out immediately. So it's great. So especially if you grew up with 80s sci-fi, there are, you know, obviously Last Starfighter, Back to the Future, like everything like that. So if those kinds of movies were important to you, you'll really enjoy this. And it's very cleverly written. Like, the plot, I'm surprised because my binging consists of watching an episode of something per night. Now, this is a comedy, so the length is about a half hour. Sometimes it's a little less, sometimes it's a little more. But it's a half hour more than an hour show. So I've been burning through like two or three episodes a night, and I've only been watching it for 3 days, and I'm already like eight episodes in. And I think there's only 10, or maybe there's 13, something like that. But it's great. There's a good overall storyline, which is really smart and clever, but really funny, especially if you know the kind of source material that they're kind of poking fun at. And it's kind of like that perfect thing for me, because I usually like to have some sort of drama going, usually some sort of science fiction-y genre drama going, and usually some sort of comedy, and this is kind of hitting both. So I really like it a lot. So if you have Hulu, I think it is definitely worth checking out. Like I said, unless the raunch doesn't appeal to you, then don't. Because they'll be like, "I can't believe Anelia recommended this. That's so gross. I'm never listening to one of his picks again."
And I believe the female lead / time traveler was in the short-lived Scrubs spinoff comedy on ABC.
She looked very familiar to me. I didn't I was going to sort of IMDb her after the fact, because it's one of those things like, I know she was in something.
She was in that. Also in the ensemble comedy with one of the Wayans. I can't remember, but it was like the people in New York and oh my gosh, I cannot remember the name of that show. It was hilarious. It was a funny show. And there was like two characters that were standout in that, but she was in that as well.
Sounds like she's looking for a place to land and found a good one.
Yeah.
Oh no, she's the lead, and she's great in it, because she's like this tough female warrior from the future, like this dystopian future. So they're coming back to try to prevent it, and it's hilarious because there's like a fish out of water element to it, where the two from the future don't have any of the comforts or the social graces of our time. So they're just constantly making, like, just being all these faux pas and like it's so funny, some of it. I mean, it is that sort of setup for it where it's like, what are they going to do now? Because they've never had this before. And, you know, there's a scene where like he accidentally tries meth. And like, so the whole rest of the episode is like, have you tried this meth? It's fantastic. Like, it's like, you know, so it's great. It's really funny. So yeah, if that kind of thing appeals to you, and if you're into genre and not squeamish about it, I think you'll enjoy it, because I'm liking it more than I thought I would. So that is my,
you know, one of the things that's really cool too, because you're mentioning like the short-lived projects that she was on, between Hulu and Netflix and like Amazon Prime even, there's so many different series things that are coming out now where they can just drop the whole series, mm-hmm. right? You know, here's a full season, and it's upending that apple cart of a show has to find its audience in order to survive, or a show has to, I mean, yes, to get a second season, it's going to need that. But instead of it being a week to week sort of thing where, you know, the tyranny of the Nielsen scan says whether or not, you know, we're going to end up with being able to like finish a plot arc here at all or see these characters get anywhere. I think it really is going to change how we see, you know, networks, both actually broadcast networks and the streaming networks dealing with storytelling moving forward. I mean, it already has adapted to the whole, you know, Netflix and binge kind of culture that we're in now. And so I think that is cool and interesting to me because of how it's likely to just change the business of what stories live and what stories die and how we develop patience for them, right?
And I think it's interesting though that like networks and cable channels are still trying to force streaming to conform to their way of doing things. So as an example,
yeah, episode by episode,
CBS All Access, you can stream Star Trek Discovery one episode at a time every Sunday.
Like, well, in that case.
and Hulu is kind of in the middle somewhere because the networks own Hulu.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It is a stream. So with Future Man, they put them all out at once. And that's great because now I've burned through more than half of it in 3 days. But now Runaways is out. Marvel's Runaways is on Hulu. And that's a Hulu original. And they put the first three episodes mm-hmm. up. And now I think they're going to release them week to week after this. Now, for me, I will probably just wait till the whole season is there and then watch it. But, you know, they're kind of playing with it. They're sort of stuck in the middle. Like, do we put them all out? Do we put them out week by week? So Hulu, I think a lot of times their originals have put them out week to week. But sometimes they do all at once. And I think there's pros and cons to both. I think if you drop it all, then people like me watch it in a couple days or a week. And then if people like me who have a podcast or a blog or something can then recommend it, and then maybe more people watch it. So it is, but then there's a value to doing it week to week too, because then everybody talks about it. And then you have 10 weeks of people talking about it. If you have like a Game of Thrones where it's like, did you see it this week? Blah, 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 blah. And, you know, I heard something and I thought this was interesting too, with Stranger Things. Obviously, that's the Netflix model where they put it all out at once. And I saw a bunch of articles written where they said, you know, they really should have done that week to week because that show was so popular that why not put it
stretch
out week
it out,
to week and stretch it and have people keep talking about it for like 2 months rather than, you know, the couple weeks when everyone watched it in the first. So I think there's pros and cons doing it both. And I think it's kind of shaking out which way it's going to be. And it probably works better for some than for others. But,
and I know, you know, in the world of publishing and with novels, I got a question when I went on Paul Semmel's blog about what I, because it's a series that I've written or I'm writing, I should say, should people, you know, buy it book by book, or should people just sort of wait until we reach the end of the trilogy, third book is out, and binge it? And my response was, please God, no, don't wait.
Right.
Because of course books do not work on that sort of whole dump model. I mean, occasionally you'll get pieces of a series that come out with much smaller time gaps in between them, because when book one was acquired, book two or book three were already written. And so they can space it out by 4 months or 6 months instead of a year or 18. But yeah, I mean, I think people's appetites for how they ingest their stories have changed, and to a certain degree, their patience for how stories unfold as well, and you know, how long they're willing to wait, and all of that. And I think, I'm not sure how much we compartmentalize between this is something I'm watching versus this is something I'm reading, and there's a reason why the method of taking in the story is different here versus there.
Yeah, and I feel like a few years ago, publishing was sort of experimenting with that, where I remember specifically with the Jason Huff books, where his first three books came out all within like 3 months of each other. And I feel like they played with that for a while, and I haven't seen that so much lately. So anyway, but Tracy has a hard out. She mentioned her signing, so she has to make it out to her signing. So I want to say once again, her book is called The Nine. It is out through Pyre, and it is out as we speak. So go and pick it up. We have Pyre always puts out those really gorgeous sort of trade paperbacks that I just love. I always think that's been one of Pyre's strengths, is their covers and the way they put stuff out. So it's a great looking book, as are most of the Pyre books. I'm assuming it's out in ebook. Will there be an audio book as well, Tracy?
Audio is out now as well. I was very fortunate to have Elisa Bresnahan, who was the narrator for Charlie Jane Anderson's All the Birds in the Sky. Recorded books, put out the audiobook the same day as the book itself debuted, which was November 14. So you can get that via any of the downloadable media services. And they're making hard disk copies as well that should distribute sometime in the not too distant future. So yeah, it's ebook, it's print, it's and some foreign rights sales as well coming down the pike. So it should be making its way around the world.
Fantastic. And I know you're doing a signing today, but do you have any other public appearances coming up? Any other signings, any con appearances coming that our listeners can come and check you out at?
I'm going to be on programming, although the programming schedule isn't completely put together yet, at Confusion, which is just outside of Detroit in January. I want to say it's the weekend of January 18, somewhere around there. And I'm also going to be at Capricorn, which
Ooh,
is...
we in, love Capricorn.
Yeah. Yeah, so I'm going to be at Capricorn, and that's in February, because Capricorn. And I want to say that is the 17th, 18th, and I'll be on programming there. They're just working on figuring it out, exactly what panels and all of that. I'm going to have another book signing that I'm going to be doing at the Crawford Branch Library, which is part of the Indianapolis, Indiana Library District, where I was, invited to appear there by one of their young adult librarians. And so that's going to be a day of programming that I do, doing workshop teaching on world building and a reading and some book signing and all sorts of fun stuff. And more things coming down the pike. So I have a website where folks can check out. I try to keep things updated about my events calendar. It's www.tracytownsend.net. Folks can find me on Twitter at TheStoryMatic. And I'm on Facebook as well under my name.
I will throw it out there for Capricorn that there's a little known clause that you can invoke for being on programming there. There's a gentleman named Joe. He works in the marketing department, and you can demand that he bring you cannoli.
Oh, all right. Well, I am a fan of cannoli, so this is valuable intel, and I will hold on to it.
And he listens to this show, so now he knows that I've told you.
The cannoli, the cannoli secret is out, Joe. I'm coming for you.
Joe's great, and he will get
he's
you cannolis.
Now, yeah, as he's listening to this, he's rolling his eyes, and he's going, oh, Patrick.
Like, when are you going to stop with the cannoli thing?
Yeah. Well, Patrick, I had to tell him that when I moved to Denver, I had come from California, but I was living in Denver, and my boss at the time, a great guy, his name was Ron Siricchio. We were talking about how I was having trouble finding good places to eat and good food. And he's like, well, what do you really, really want? And I said, I really want a cannoli. He goes, really? You want a cannoli? And he's Italian. He's like, all right, I guess if you want one, I know where we can go get one. And he takes me to this place on Federal, and what they do is they take a cannoli shell, they stuff it with sausage, and they pour marinara over it, and they call it a cannoli.
Oh my gosh.
And I said, what the hell is this?
You got cannoli trolled.
And he's like, well, you said you wanted a cannoli. And I said, I do. This is not a cannoli.
Tracy, I don't know how you're going to figure that out, but I want you to think about it this weekend, and I want you to find some way to make the hashtag cannoli troll.
I
don't know how that's gonna work, but I feel like there needs to be a hashtag cannoli troll.
Yeah, there could be some really great visuals coming out of that one too.
Horrifying. Yeah. So maybe both. But that's great. I'm happy to see here you going to Capricorn. Patrick and I had a great time there. We were the media guests of honor a couple of years ago, so we had a great time there. And great people, you're gonna have a great time at that one. So awesome. Thank you for letting our listeners know all about that. And best of luck with the book. For us, once again, if you dig the show, consider becoming one of our backers over at patreon.com/functionalnerds. Patrick, anything else before we wrap it up?
Nothing I can think of.
Okay. Well, everyone have a great week. Tracy, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me. This is great.
All right. And we'll see everyone next time.
All right. You take care. Have a good one.
Say thank you on behalf of the group and ourselves, and I hope we pass the audition.
You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.
Would you like a chili, baby?
I'm the one in the middle.